It's All Things Considered on HPR1, and I'm Dave Lawrence. This weekend, John Fogerty returns to the state, and between his CCR days with Creedence Clearwater Revival through to his solo successes, John Fogerty, a name, voice, and guitarist you probably know, and we are the fortunate ones today, having him on the line with us ahead of his Honolulu date tomorrow and then Maui on Saturday. Hey, John, welcome to HPR. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, I do, Dave. Thank you.
You're welcome, and thank you. I really appreciate you taking a moment to speak with me. Been a fan for a very long time.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
What inspired this 1969 theme? I know there are three critical records that came out in that year.
Well, the inspiration for this came from my wife. You know, over the years, people, of course, have remarked on the fact that Creedence put out three albums in that year, 1969. And one day my wife said, why don't we just have a show where we actually present the idea of the year of 1969? And that was a different way of looking at the same thing. And I thought, gee, that might be fun. So obviously I play as much music from those three albums as possible. Going back to that year, I was a highly motivated individual, let's say. And after Susie Q was a hit, there has been a syndrome in rock and roll called the one-hit wonder. And I was perfectly poised at the edge of that particular cliff to become one of those. I said, oh my goodness, I don't want that to happen. So I sort of took stock of my situation. I was on a tiny label, and we didn't really have a manager or a publicist or any of the stuff that you usually have. And so I kind of said this phrase to myself, well, I guess I'm just going to have to do it with music, meaning I'm going to take the bull by the horns and just write as many good songs as I can and get them rehearsed with my band and recorded and get the music out there. And luckily and happily, the very first single, Proud Mary, and the album Bayou Country, which came out on January 1st of 69, provided a very nice introduction or a launching pad for this bunch of music that was about to come out of me. I just got really, really busy.
It was an unusual moment in society in some ways.
That's sort of what we present in the show. 1969, the late 60s, was a very culturally interesting and even volatile time in America and in the world. Of course, the people of my generation were just starting to come of age, the so-called boomers. A lot of ideas floating around in the air. Of course, various things happened. Woodstock, also the U.S. put a man on the moon, and Creedence had 8 hit songs on the radio, if not more, that year.
Looking back, if you could, would you have spaced those records out? It almost seems like you get more mileage.
I mean, would I have spread them out in hindsight?
Yeah, in hindsight, if you could have dropped them in like 71, 72, and just kept them going like
no,
that.
No, I was totally going in the face of the current wisdom. I mean, I know a few people, the guy at the record company, was saying, well, you should save those, you know, it was
right.
Born on the Bayou and Proud Mary were the single. And I just thought the people I really, really idolized that were at the very top of the mountain, meaning the Beatles and Elvis, had a whole bunch of double-sided hit singles. And so I aspired to that.
You mentioned a couple inspirations there, John. Some other inspirations, though, that have been close to you, Little Richard and Bo Diddley. And aside from that 2008 Grammys jam with Little Richard, have you been able to interact with them meaningfully in your career?
Well, not Little Richard. I wish I could have. That was really the first time we had met. And I finally got to tell him that I've loved him since I was a child. I'm sure when you say that to somebody, it always makes them feel older or something. But I consider him probably the greatest rock and roll singer of all time.
Bo Diddley.
Oh, yeah. Way back in the day with Creedence, we got to do one whole season of touring with Bo.
Wow.
We did a series of dates that summer. I think that was probably 71, if I'm not mistaken. Bo was a cool guy. That was interesting.
He had quite a mouth on him, too, sometimes, as I recall.
Yeah, pretty good, yeah.
Finally, John, I don't know how much you talk about this, but the 1990 special visit to Mississippi, Robert Johnson's grave, is that a spiritual journey for you? And are there elements to that visit and your subsequent funding of headstones for other legends that you'd just like to share? Anything that came of that internally for you?
That's a very interesting story. I had been getting sort of this call or hearing this message in my head that I should go to Mississippi. And it probably started somewhere around 1987, and it just had been there a while. You know, it was like a thought or a distraction. But it kept getting louder and louder and more insistent. And finally, sometime in late 89 or early 90, it just became overwhelming or compelling kind of like when Richard Dreyfuss in Close Encounters is building that mashed potato mountain on his dining room table.
Right.
Finally, I went to she was my fiance then. I told Julie, I said, I don't know why, but I've got to go to Mississippi. She says, why? I said, I don't know. And so then she says, well, when are you going? I said, well, I got to go now. I ended up taking probably half a dozen trips. What I told myself, well, I'm filling in the blues family tree. I mean, all these artists I grew up with that were basically making hit records when I was a kid, and they were on the radio, like Jimmy Reed, and of course Elvis was from Mississippi, and Bo Diddley, and Muddy Waters, Howlin' Wolf, a lot of other people that I knew maybe less about, but it came to know better. These trips consisted really of a lot of reading, a lot of listening to music, and then a lot of visiting grave sites, because many of the people already passed on. There were actually two or three purported burial sites of Robert Johnson. But the day I was there, I had this vision, because right at that moment, Robert Johnson had a hit box set. He was in the top 10, and so it was quite interesting. I was arguing in the heat of Mississippi, well, God, I wonder who owns those songs. And I had the picture that it was probably some shyster with a big cigar in a tall building, and I got disgusted by that thought. I'm standing there looking at the dirt, the gravesite.
Right.
And I said to myself, it doesn't matter, Robert. I'm literally talking first person to Robert. It doesn't matter. Everybody knows those are your songs. And I guess it was something to do with the heat of the day. The minute my mind formed that thought, and I believe I was actually speaking out loud at times, I realized that that was exactly my own predicament. You know, I mean, it was the strangest thing. A light went on in my head and I said, John, that's just like you. So you got to start playing your songs, because I had sworn off playing them for like 25 years. I said, you got to start playing your song before you're lying here in the ground like Robert. I mean, it was just so clear. I kind of made up my mind, okay, yeah, I'll do that when the time comes. Made a few more visits down there and learned an awful lot about the blues. You know, I had never even seen what the Delta looked like, so it really helped put it all in perspective. And then finally, I went through a period of playing dobro and then more guitar and got my album Blue Moon Swamp recorded. This was now 1997. And I started to do actually the very first press. It was actually the fella at Warner Brothers Records. I'm talking to him about it, and I said, you know, I had this funny thing happen. I was at the grave with Robert Johnson, and then I looked at him and I said, oh, my God. That was the reason I was called to go to Mississippi. It's like it took 7 years for me to figure out. You know, and life is really weird, but that was such a mind-blowing confession, and the two thoughts finally joined in my head. I said, that's what the whole thing was for. Oh, my goodness. It was pretty exciting.
I love the way they connect like that and the impact it had on your catalog. John, I know I got to let you go. I'm just grateful that you took the time to talk with us today. It really means a lot to me.
You bet, Dave. Nice talking with you, too. Thank you.